This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. A state-sponsored tourism program hopes to train, recruit, and retain workers for West Virginia's booming tourist industry, starting in high school.
Touring the state and showing people that it's such a great place, this experience with the West Virginia Governor School of Tourism has only furthered that motive.
That story and more coming up this West Virginia Morning. Support for West Virginia Morning is proudly provided by Luke Frazier. Union Carbide has applied for a water pollution permit for a facility in South Charleston. As Curtis Tate explains, the company has been in federal court over the site for several years.
Union Carbide applied to the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection for a National Pollution Discharge Elimination System permit for its Massey rail yard. The application, dated June 26th, was filed in U.S. District Court in Charleston in an ongoing lawsuit against Union Carbide by the Cortland Company, which owns property in South Charleston. Cortland first filed suit against Union Carbide in 2018 over water pollution from the Massey rail yard and the adjacent Philmont landfill. In its latest filing, Union Carbide indicated it also will submit a permit application for the landfill. Senior Judge John T. Copenhaver Jr. ruled last year that the landfill was an illegal open dump and that Union Carbide violated the Clean Water Act by not seeking permits under federal law. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Curtis Tate in Charleston.
The state's two largest universities will receive more than $500,000 to improve student success. Chris Schultz has more.
The National Science Foundation has awarded more than $650,000 for two West Virginia research initiatives. More than $350,000 will support a 10-week interactive research program at Marshall University to engage STEM students with career workshops and hands-on learning opportunities. The rest of the funds, just over $300,000, will support research at West Virginia University to assess obstacles faced by socioeconomically disadvantaged graduate students and the effect that these disadvantages have on student retention. The National Science Foundation was established in 1950 by Congress to promote the progress of science and, according to their website, their grants account for about 25% of federal support to America's colleges and universities for basic research. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Chris Schultz in Morgantown.
A bill to create a federal plan to prevent and cure Parkinson's disease, introduced by Shelley Moore Capito, became law last week. Emily Rice has more.
According to a 2019 study, West Virginia has the third highest prevalence rate of Parkinson's in the country, with about 7,000 people living with the disease. During a press conference with her fellow Senate Republicans on Tuesday, Senator Shelley Moore Capito announced that a bill she helped introduce to address Parkinson's disease nationally has been signed into law.
As of 2 weeks ago, there now will be developed a national plan to end Parkinson's disease. We know it manifests in a lot of different ways. We haven't done the research and development across the country.
The act creates an advisory council that will support research, care, and services for Parkinson's. For Appalachia Health News, I'm Emily Rice in Charleston.
Appalachia Health News is a project of West Virginia Public Broadcasting with support from Marshall Health. The Allegheny Front, based in Pittsburgh, is a public radio program that reports on environmental issues in the region. Here's their latest story about the final recommendations after the East Palestine, Ohio rail accident.
The National Transportation Safety Board issued the findings of its investigation into the derailment in East Palestine, Ohio last year. This is the Allegheny Front Environment Update. I'm Carol Holsapple. The investigation looked at the causes of last February's derailment of 38 Norfolk Southern train cars, which led to fires and a decision to release a toxic chemical that permeated the region along the Ohio-Pennsylvania border. The NTSB also presented 31 new recommendations to improve rail safety and emergency response nationwide. The Allegheny Friend's Julie Grant has been following this story. Julie, last week's meeting in East Palestine was the final one for the NTSB on this matter. What was the focus?
A lot of the discussion was very technical. For example, the NTSB found that an overheated wheel bearing caused the train to derail. It had reached incredibly high temperatures, and the detectors along the tracks were spaced too far apart to catch the problem in time to stop the train. NTSB investigators said if those detectors are 15 miles apart or less, that improves safety. The rail industry did recently adopt new standards calling for an average spacing of 15 miles, but that did not please NTSB's Jennifer Homendy, who said an average is too lenient.
Would that have done anything for this one to prevent it?
No, ma'am.
Not a single thing. They're adopting the exact same thing that occurred here.
So the NTSB is recommending that those detectors be spaced no more than 15 miles apart along the tracks.
Is the NTSB recommending other equipment changes as a result of the East Palestine accident?
Yeah, investigators focused on a certain type of tank car, one called the DOT-111. According to the NTSB, when these cars were in accidents, more than half released their contents. And that happened in East Palestine with cars that contained the flammable butyl acrylate and other materials. And while no one was killed in this derailment, these types of cars have been involved in deaths in other places. NTSB board member Michael Graham pointed out that more than 25,000 of these tank cars are still in use.
If DOT-111 cars continue to carry hazardous materials, we will see more derailments and the release of hazardous materials in communities.
The NTSB is recommending a phase-out of those and similar tank cars.
I know a big concern for the community was the decision to vent and burn toxic chemicals. How did that play out at this last meeting?
In the 2 days after the derailment, Norfolk Southern was concerned that one of the five tank cars containing vinyl chloride was undergoing a chemical process and could explode. The company urged the commander in charge, that was the local fire chief, to very quickly approve the vent and burn, saying there were no other options. But before the operation was initiated, the temperature inside that rail car had actually been decreasing and was stable for many hours. Other experts on the scene advised Norfolk Southern that the vent and burn was no longer necessary. But Norfolk Southern never relayed that to the fire chief. The NTSB said in its findings that Norfolk Southern created unwarranted urgency in pushing the decision to do the vent and burn, and said there was no justification for failing to communicate alternative opinions. NTSB Chair Jennifer Homendy also added that Norfolk Southern did not want the agency to publicize this narrative and did not make investigating the case easy.
Numerous times, Norfolk Southern delayed or failed to provide critical investigative information to our team.
Okay, thank you so much, Julie.
Sure thing, Kara.
You can see all of the reporting on East Palestine by Allegheny Front's Julie Grant and our partners at AlleghenyFront.org. That's the Allegheny Front Environment Update. I'm Carol Holsapple.
The Allegheny Front is based in Pittsburgh and reports on regional environmental news. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:52. Partly sunny today, high temperatures in the 80s and 90s. There is a heat advisory beginning at noon today for areas in the eastern panhandle. Heat indexes there could reach 105 degrees. Tonight, partly cloudy with lows in the 60s and partly sunny tomorrow with highs in the 80s. Support for WVPB is provided by Marshall Health, providing comprehensive primary and specialty care throughout southern West Virginia and the tri-state region. More at marshallhealth.org. Imagine packing all the highlights of things to do in West Virginia into one fun-filled trip. That's what the inaugural Governor's School of Tourism did recently for several dozen high school students. But as Maria Young reports, there are some high hopes riding on the career choices of these students will make in the years ahead.
The winding road from West Virginia's capital city to the middle of Logan County is hilly but peaceful.
We are going to bump this bridge, so don't panic.
Nothing like the roaring revving of machines that awaits visitors to the Hatfield-McCoy Trail System. Here there are hundreds of wooded miles of steep inclines, sudden drops, and hairpin turns that attract over 95,000 visitors a year, most of them from out of state. This and other ventures across the state are great for tourism, but the folks who track all those visitors say there aren't enough workers to handle them all. That's why the West Virginia Department of Tourism hosted high school students from across the state for the first ever Governor's School for Tourism.
All right, guys, right here. Big smiles. 3, 2, 1.
Lauren Bodner is the department's director of public relations.
And I know that this is something that Secretary Ruby and Governor Justice have wanted for a really long time.
She's helping to host the 50 students, nearly one from every county in West Virginia, who've been selected for the tourism school.
I believe they're traveling over 1,000 miles from the northern panhandle in Wheeling to southern West Virginia to the eastern panhandle, Harpers Ferry, and Cacapon Resort State Park. They're really seeing and doing so much, and they're getting a great introduction to the variety of career paths that are available to them in the tourism sector.
From whitewater rafting and zip lines to Blennerhassett Island and the Charleston Dirty Birds baseball game, it sounds like a summer camp on steroids.
Are you guys liking the weather today, too?
Yes.
But there is a serious message for these students. Your state needs you.
As we know, the tourism industry in West Virginia is just booming. It's growing at a rapid pace, which is amazing, but we need the workforce to aid that growth. You can't keep accepting visitors and not have the workforce growing as well. So I think we see this as kind of a way to start planting seeds with students who are in high school.
16-year-old Evan Bass is a rising junior from Clay County.
Anything tourism-based, I'm known around the school for loving it. I'm known for getting out, hiking. My nickname around the school was the Dirty Hippie, but I'm not dirty, I promise.
He was selected for the tourism school, and he's exactly the kind of investment tourism officials believe will pay off in years to come.
Things I've learned are we have so much to offer here in the Mountain State, and almost heaven as a whole is something that couldn't be any more true than I thought. In all honesty, I couldn't see myself doing anything besides tourism for West Virginia. I love it more than life itself. In all honesty, this is what makes me who I am, touring this state and showing people that it's such a great place. This experience with the West Virginia Governor's School of Tourism has only furthered that motive.
Jeffrey Lusk is the executive director of the Hatfield-McCoy Regional Recreation Authority. He's seen firsthand the impact a tourism boom has on the local economy.
Since the trail's inception, we've had over 70 new businesses open up just doing lodging, just folks that are opening up either remodeling grandma's house or opening up a hotel or a motel or cabins or major resorts. So we have a dozen major resorts that have opened up in southern West Virginia, with our primary customer being this ATV, UTV, off-road motorcycle enthusiast.
Lusk hopes the tourism school inspires the students to pursue careers in tourism, particularly as entrepreneurs.
This is going to potentially create a ready-made workforce for us. We're hoping that these kids go away from here with wanting to open up a business, with wanting to take hospitality in high school, with wanting to go to college in hospitality or tourism management. We need all of those folks in tourism, and we don't have enough of them.
He says the tourism industry here offers good jobs with competitive benefits and salaries.
When you look at a hospitality management job, they are no different than any other business management field you see. We're competing for the same workers, and you have to pay a livable wage with benefits. Especially since our managers are getting older, it's really creating a lot of voids where there's a lot of opportunity.
That's exactly what students like Evan Bass need to hear.
I mean, we have opportunities beyond opportunities. Tourism-wise, it's flooded right now. That's the goal with tourism, is to make people want to stay and make people want to keep coming back and hopefully settle some roots down in West Virginia.
For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Maria Young on the trail in Logan County.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University. West Virginia Morning is produced with help from Bill Lynch, Brianna Heaney, Chris Schultz, Curtis Tate, Emily Rice, Eric Douglas, Jack Walker, Liz McCormick, and Maria Young. Emily Rice produced today's show. I'm your host, Teresa Wills. This is West Virginia Morning.